podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 87 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in partnership with the Fan Hub, where the fans come first, and also our local business sponsor, Vici Clo. Pete's not here this week. Lee's back. He had a cracking time when he was doing his downhill skiing down Mount Pleasant last week, but Lee's back, so we'll catch up with him in a second. Pete's not here this week. He's abseiling down the cathedral, so good luck to Pete there. He's doing that all day, going up and down all day, so that'll be great for him. So if you do see him when you're going past, give him a wave. But we're also delighted to say we've been joined for the second time on the show, and the first time was probably a good 18 months ago off the top of my head. But we've been joined by Matt Jones from the Blue Room. Matt, how are you, mate?
Not too bad, mate. Not too bad. I think the fact that your contributors and guests are all abseiling and skiing, making the Blue Room look quite lazy, to be honest. I need to get people out there doing a bit more, I think, yeah.
Yeah,
Dave Downey's playing 36 holes a day, isn't he?
Oh well, yeah. To be fair, yeah, mate. You know, someone like Dave, then we get someone to carry his bag for him and all that. I'm sure he's got a nice buggy to go around on the course with him. So, but no, it's great to be on. I think the last time I was on with you guys, it was the day when it was meant to be Everton versus Liverpool women at Goodison Park, and it was called off because there was a bit of a storm, and yeah. Making my way across Sefton Park in hail to get to yours, yeah.
But, I remember
Good to be back, yeah.
Yeah, more than welcome, mate. Look forward to obviously speaking more over the course of the next hour or so. Lee, how was your downhill skiing down Mount Pleasant? How did it go? Was the weather good? Good bit of
snow, mate, covering a bit icy. A bit icy in patches. Yeah. Stacked it a few times. Other than that, mate, no, it was good, yeah, thanks.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing some footage of that anyway, as the week goes on. But let's pick up who we may. Let's get back to why we're all here today, and that's to obviously discuss the Blues. And we were on last week with El Pivote. Andy was on in your place, Lee, obviously previewing the Brighton game, and that's come and gone. We're not really going to touch on that. That'll come in at some point over the course of the next hour. But let's pick up if we can. The most recent game on Friday night against Spurs, and Matt, if it comes to you first, probably the one word I'd choose to probably describe the game is probably frustrating.
Yeah, massively so, mate. Yeah, I said on our post match that it's off the scale on the frustrationometer from my point of view. To be honest, I think I've watched the highlights back, and there's maybe a bit more of an even game than I thought. You know, Spurs hit the woodwork twice in the second half. They have a one-on-one, which Pickford does well from Son, but Everton are the better team in general play. I think Everton create the better chances overall, and I think it's just always dead frustrating when you score a really good goal to go ahead and then you get pegged back, because it sort of makes that goal forgotten about in the grand scheme of things, doesn't it, you know, months and years down the line. But yeah, there were some positive signs, but in the same breath, I think at this point in the season, when you're in the mix for things, it's more about results than performances, isn't it? So you sort of looking at it and think, yeah, there's things to build on here, we can potentially move forward and get a little bit better, but right now it should be all about wins. And it's another game that's gone by where we played against a team that, certainly in the last two home games, we played against a team that we played better than. We played against a team that I think aren't really that fussed and are sort of checked out a little bit, and we haven't been able to get the job done. So yeah, totally agree, mate, massively frustrating.
Do you echo those thoughts, Lee? Because obviously we're recording a couple of days later. Sometimes when we always say this, when you look at a game straight after full time, emotions are still quite heightened, aren't they? Especially in a game where two mistakes has basically cost us the game. But like Matt's saying there, you know, this is the business end of the season now, where you know you take a scrappy 1-0 over looking good in a 2-2.
Yeah, I actually totally agree with Matt there. It's all about results in the last stage of the season, 100%. And unfortunately now, is that four games now we've gone without a win? I think it's four, isn't it?
I think it's five now.
Five, six now.
Six in all competitions, yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, for me, we're almost looking over our shoulder now at Leeds and Arsenal. You know what I mean? As opposed to trying to pull away from the pack. And, you know, we've discussed this at length in the last few games. It's just super frustrating. You know, we've sort of had a mixed bag the last few weeks, but I thought we did enough to beat Spurs in that game. I have to agree with Matt. Kane aside, I don't think the rest of them are really that bothered. They know they've had a tough season. I think some of them even know, even, you know, Mourinho's job's probably on the line in the summer as well. So some of them have checked out on that basis. I know a few Spurs fans who absolutely hate Jose as well. And you look at that Spurs team on paper, I'm sure we all did it before kickoff and thought, that's a strong team, that. You know, and also their bench as well. You know, the bench, you know, compare it to our bench, they've got some depth. And, you know, for me, you know, cagey opening at the start, both teams trying to get a foothold in the game. You know, and they've just scored out of nowhere, haven't they? I mean, it was, well, obviously we'll dissect it in a minute, but that first goal was very soft. But after that, I thought we knocked it around really nice. I liked the way we passed it. The passing was crisp. We pressed with intent. You know, it looked a completely different team to the Brighton game. I think that, you know, people have been criticising Carlo quite a bit. You know, what's our style of play? How are we playing? I think for me, if you describe it at the minute, Carlo has got, you know, we've said it before, like a Frankenstein squad from several different managers. I think he just looks at what plays he's got available and decides then, goes, right, how are we going to set up and play today? It's as simple as that. And there's some players there in that squad he just doesn't simply trust at all. And therefore then goes, right, we're going to set up and be hard to beat today, like he did against Brighton. We get a few more creative players back, a few more higher level players back, and all of a sudden we look a completely different team against Tottenham. So I think, you know, in terms of answering that sort of style of play question, I genuinely think he's trying to shore up the defence and make us hard to beat, but only opens up a bit when he has the players that he trusts to do so.
I think we're more comfortable. I was more comfortable going into the Spurs game on Friday than I was going into the Brighton game, to be honest with you, because I knew what to expect in the Brighton game. We knew we had mountains of injuries, which, whether people want to take it on board or not, it is a massive, massive factor in how we play. When you haven't got some of your most important players, you know, and in the Brighton game, obviously the core, who's potentially going to be out for the remainder of the season, we just don't know. Allen wasn't fit for the Brighton game. You got your top goal scorer who scored 19 goals this season, wasn't fit for the Brighton game. You're playing Mason Holgate in centre midfield. You know, it was still elements of sort of square peg round hole situation. On Friday against a better side, a more quality side, like you said, Lee, a squad in Spurs, which is ahead of us, make no mistake about it. And that's just being honest. The quality that they've got in, say, an 18, 19-man squad is much better than what we've got. And, you know, like you said before, Matt, it was more to do with the motivation of Spurs. And that should have really played into our hands because of the fact that there's a little bit of unrest that seems with Jose Mourinho. Potentially the players have switched off. And that's where the frustration comes in with, you know, two mistakes in the game have cost us what would have been a comfortable 3 points, because at times, you know, I mean, the second goal was fantastic, which we'll talk about in a minute, but at times we played some nice stuff and we looked very bright. But on that first goal, if we go to that first of all, there was a lot of mistakes in there. It wasn't just a simple case of it's being flicked on by Michael Keane, he's got up too early and it's fell to Kane. There was quite a few mistakes, Matt, wasn't there, in the build-up and how that goal actually came about?
Yeah, probably the most frustrating thing is that about a minute before Tottenham scored, Everton kicked the ball out of play when the Spurs player's down injured in the attacking position. And I know that doesn't lead directly to the goal by any means. And, you know, I love the Burns of James Rodriguez, but come on, lad. You know, just keep going there. Because they did exactly the same in the second half and nearly scored from it. But, yeah, I think the goal, the first goal and the second one as well, actually sort of, I think it's sort of a product of what Lee was saying there in regards to the manager seems to be happy to change his team week to week depending on what he's got and depending on the opposition we're playing against. So you've got a situation there where Ben Godfrey's sort of playing half as the third centre-back in a back three, half at right-back, and is a bit slow getting out to the cross. You know, he doesn't know whether to go into that space or not. And then you've got a situation there where you've got Holgate and Keane in the middle. Probably haven't played a centre-back pairing that much this season together. You know, it's tended to be Keane, Mina, Godfrey, with Holgate either, you know, at right back or on the bench. And I think it's just a bit of that bit of uncertainty of not knowing where your centre-back partner is, not being able to read and anticipate what's going to go on. And I think that the first goal doesn't really annoy me as much as the second one. The second one is more of a breakdown, I think. But I think in both of them, and looking at Keane in particular, you know, if you've got Michael Keane on the pitch, the one thing you're hopeful of is the when crosses come into the box, he'll be able to deal with them, because that should be his bread and butter. You know, if Son's running at him like he did that one time in the second half out wide, you're thinking this is not a situation he's comfortable in. You can expect him to struggle there. But if you get a cross into the box from out wide, you'd expect him to deal with that. He's just got under it, hasn't he? I don't think Holgate's quite as culpable in either of the goals, but maybe he could react a little bit more to the second one, to the first one a little bit better. But yeah, just one of those things where it looked like three centre-backs who were involved in us conceding it, who weren't quite sure and weren't quite aggressive enough. And I think that stems from ultimately not playing in a set system and getting used to it long enough, or not playing alongside certain players as much, which has come about because of injuries and come about because the manager likes to rotate his options there.
Yeah, and the last person you want it to fall to is Harry Kane, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
He's probably the most clinical striker in the league. I said to one of my mates as well, I said, look, albeit hypothetical, you know, we have Harry Kane in our team in that game, we win 3-4-0, or 3-4-2, shall we say, if you're going to say those two goals. And that's the difference. We created, you know, if you look at the Palace game and the Spurs game, our last two home games, where let's be honest, we've been poor this season. We've had 35 attempts on goal in two games at home, and created some really big chances in those games as well, and we've missed some sitters. You know, we should have walked the Palace game. You know, they're another team, Matt, like you were saying before, with the flip-flops on, aren't they? They've got nothing to play for. You know, we threw that game away. And I don't want to jump on Keane too much. It's a weird one because, you know, overall for me, he's had a decent season. Since we've switched back to this, this central three, he struggled. He played right of a three, didn't he, against Palace? And that's where the goal came from, in his face there, you know, from that side where the lad bent it in the corner. And then arguably he's at fault for the two goals here. I just don't think he's comfortable at all in that system. I think Keane, when you're playing in a low block with a back four and he has to win the headers, kick it, and he's not bad with the ball at his feet, that's where Keane comes into his own. And that's where he made his name at Burnley, wasn't it? But suddenly, Carlo likes to tinker with it, likes to change it. He likes his players to be tactically flexible. And I think Keane has struggled in that. You know, he looked a bit more comfortable in the centre of a three against Spurs. But, you know, arguably, those two absolute clangers have cost us the game. That wasn't the only chances Spurs created. Like you said, Matt, they did have a few other chances. But you'd like to think, you know, we had 18 shots, 7 on target, you know, that should be more than enough to create home. And Hammers was pulling the strings, wasn't he? I mean, some of the passes, some of the little touches. I mean, that pass into Richarlison where he's given Alderweireld the eyes there. Alderweireld's shifting over, thinking it's going to Luka Dean. He's played it inside him. To be honest, it's a tame effort from Richarlison, that. I mean, he's made it easy for Lloris by dragging it into him. But, again, I hate to say it, that's Kane. He probably gives the keeper the eyes and hooks it in the other corner. You know what I mean? And it's 1-0. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. But I don't want to jump too much on Keane, because I think overall, you know, he has had a decent season. He's probably thrown away his player of the season chances now with the last two home games. But other than that, I think he has had a decent season, to be fair to the lad.
Yeah, I think the mistakes he made on Friday, I think they're just ones you go, he's had a shit game. He's just had a shit game, and he's made some you know, big mistakes in the match. And, you know, those matches happen. I think the ones you mentioned there, Lee, in regards to, you know, Palace at home and some of the ones he's made recently, it's more to do with us playing in a different system and in playing in positions where he's not comfortable. And I think those are mistakes that have come about because of the system. Really, on Friday, like I said, you know, you want Michael Keane in those moments. You want him heading and clearing crosses away. You know, you think back to the Merseyside derby and how well he did that night at Anfield, playing in that position and doing exactly that. You know, our second goal comes from him reading across really well and getting it out. But I just think he had a bad night. I just think he had a bad night on Friday. And I think maybe the worry for someone like him is that there's been times in his Everton career where he's shown himself to be a little bit fragile in the confidence department, and where a couple of mistakes can knock him. And And maybe he's just going through that at the moment. Maybe the England thing's not helped either, being dropped from that squad. You know, I don't know. But, I think both goals just look at them and go, Yerry Mina's in the team. Maybe he deals with both of those a little bit better. I just think he's a bit more dominant and reads the danger a bit better in those situations.
I think second goal, I said at the time on Twitter that it was quite clearly an audible shout from Michael Keane. It was because Hargreaves sort of ducked out of the whole thing, didn't he? So there was quite clearly a shout there. But I think what's then happened is Hargreaves is still then coming back as much as he's trying to pull out of it. And Keane's then thinking, he's going to knock right into me then. So he sort of semi-heads, goes to head the ball without obviously not fully committing to the clearance. And that's how the mistakes come about. So it's a little bit of, I'm going to get clattered here. So probably not quite brave enough to sort of, you know, take a knock and get the ball clear. I mean, you know, it's a good finish from Harry Kane, but I mean, they were waxing lyrical about it, but you'd expect any centre forward with the salt to stick that in the back of the net from the position that he was in.
I totally agree with you there. One other thing maybe as well, just coming to me, then maybe it's the fact that it's Kane. You know, just him being there just makes defenders nervous. You know, if you've got a great striker and you know he's sniffing around, you know, if you're playing against a team like Palace, you've got, you know, all due respect to him, someone like Benteke, you know, you're not too fussed. You know, you can go in, you can deal with the game, you can be dominant, you can be aggressive against them. If it's Kane, you're probably a bit more on edge, and maybe that was a bit of a contributing factor.
Potentially so, and the mental side of the game is so important, isn't it? And when you have got top quality strikers around you, which you're going to see in the Premier League, and Harry Kane is one of the best strikers in Europe, make no mistake about it. And for me, he'll probably move on in the summer, whether it's to a Premier League side or whether he takes the chance and goes abroad to a big side. But yeah, you're right there in terms of the impact of playing against real, real quality and what it can do to you mentally. But I think, I mean, we don't want to sort of dwell too much on the fact that, you know, we had two mistakes in the game, which have cost us obviously all 3 points there, because, you know, like you were saying, Lee, in terms of the chances that we created during the game, you know, I think it was the first time since the West Brom game at Goodison Park that we created 10 or more, or had 10 or more attempts on goal in the first half, which is, you know, what a stat that is. But it was more the fact that out of those seven on target, okay, we've scored two. One's a penalty, one's a great finish from Guilty Sigurdsson. Those other chances that we've had that were on target pretty much, you look back at when it was 2-2, and to be fair, we've reacted again. We've been pegged back, but we've taken the bull by the horns and we've tried to win the game. You look at the chance that Josh King has when he comes on, puts the ball right at the feet of Lloris, comes to Richarlison, and you would put your house on him, Lee, wouldn't you, to stick that in the back of the net. And they're the kind of chances that we're talking about in terms of if you want to get European football and you want to win games, you can't afford to miss straightforward chances like that.
No, they were two good chances, weren't they? And it was the architect again, James, wasn't it? Again, just the weight of the pass. You know, great run from King, to be fair. I think if I remember rightly, I think that's his first shot in an Everton shirt as well. I can't remember him having a shot at all. So it was a good run. He's used his pace. He's got ahead of Alderweireld. And if you're being super critical, again, top striker there just rolls it in near post. He tried to obviously hit it across the keeper. But, you know, because he's got that yard on Alderweireld there, if he has that just a little bit of composure, if you look at it again, there's probably 3 or 4 yards to Lloris's left near post. And top striker there potentially just rolls that in the corner and it's 3-2. But to be fair, he's made it, you know, he's made contact. I think for him, he was just looking at getting it on target. It's come out to Richarlison. It's a good chance, but it's a difficult chance. That. I know there's a few stills been going around on Twitter saying, how's he missed that? I mean, football's not like that, is it? It's not in slow motion. It's come at him quickly. He's sprinting in as well, looking for leftovers. And, you know, he's just blazed it, hasn't he? He's tried to, you know, I think he's opened his foot, tried a side foot. He's tried to control it, but he's just blazed it completely over. And he probably should have scored. It's one of those nights for Richie, wasn't it? He had a few headers as well from set pieces. And like I said, the other one before where he tried to bend it and he's got it wrong. And yeah, he's not had his most prolific season for us, Richarlison. In what's been an indifferent season for us overall, I think he's, yeah, I was hoping he'd get sort of, you know, upwards of 15 goals really this season after his last two seasons. But obviously he's not been quite as prolific. But, you know, all day he's still one of our best players. And you can't be overly critical there. But yeah, I just wanted to mention as well, mate, apart from the chances there, I mean, Gylfi Sigurdsson. I mean, how many times, Matt, I'm sure you've discussed him several times on your podcast, and he's an enigma, isn't he? I mean, when he plays like that, you just think, give the guy a new contract. Because, you know, he's got that in his locker, Gylfi. He's an intelligent player. Carlo clearly likes him. You know, he's for me, I don't know why Carlo persists in dropping him deep sometimes, because he just cannot play that role. But when Gylfi, you saw the intelligent link up between Gylfi and James in that game. You know, the little Cruyff that James gives, give and go. You know, Gylfi, if Gylfi can show that level of consistency, you know, he's an asset to our team, isn't he?
Yeah, but I think the thing with him, he never will. No, I mean, how old is he? Is he 30, 31 now, is he? I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. So it's one of them with him. I think he's always just going to be a player who, you know, he's not going to control games, but if you can get the ball to him on the edge of the box, there is a chance he can be productive. He feels like a player you need to have supplementary pieces around. But, and yeah, I think, like you said, I think the manager trusts him to do a job, doesn't he? Whether that's playing in his normal position, whether it's playing out on the left-hand side, whether it's playing a bit deeper, I think he trusts him to do a job. But there are times, and there are far too many times, where you're watching a match and you're thinking, what's he contributing here? What's he offering to the side? Why has he got the armband on? You know, all those sorts of things that people say about him. But, you know, in terms of finishing, he's probably up there with the best finishes we got at the football club, really. You know, as much as I think back to that Burnley game earlier in the season when he missed that great chance to win the game for us that day, I think if you put the ball in front of him with, a goal to aim at with the keeper to beat, I think he's pretty reliable. But he's got a good record against Spurs, hasn't he, this season? I think he got three assists and a goal in the cup game, and then scored two the other night as well. So maybe it's just something with that. But I think they'll look to give him a new contract because I think the manager likes him. I think we saw in that interview that Mason Holgate and Ben Godfrey did with Rio Ferdinand's channel that I think a lot of the younger players look up to him in regards to the example he sets on the training pitch and all that kind of thing. I'm not entirely sure I would, but, you know, it's, I feel as though whenever Sigurdsson has a game like this where he sticks a couple of goals in, he scores a great finish, we always say, you know, he's got to kick on now, he's got to be more consistent, and he never quite does it. So as much as I can sit here and say he was magnificent on Friday and he scored a wonderful goal, I've not got faith he's going to put together a run of five games where he's going to be doing similar things, because unfortunately he's not been able to do that throughout his Everton career.
Well, that's why he's an enigma, isn't it? It's so frustrating to watch, because you watch that second goal there. Obviously, Seamus made a big difference when he came on. I thought Seamus was direct. You know, Iwobi's another question. We can discuss that again. But, you know, but Seamus comes on. He's direct. He gets his head down, plays a lovely 1-2. That is a class finish, that. That is a class finish. You know, the ball's coming across him on his weak foot. 90% of players there would lash at that with their right foot, and it probably gets blocked by Alderweireld. The fact he's let it come across him gives him the yard to get the shot off. And he's just caressed it, hasn't he, in the corner. I mean, keeper's got absolutely no chance. It's bending away from him. And you just think, that's a finish of, like, you know, you'd expect from someone like Lewandowski or someone like that. You know, that's the sort of finish. It was just a casual side foot, bottom corner. I mean, what a goal. What an absolute goal. Like, Mike, you've said it, you know, possibly one of our, you know, certainly being the top five goals of the season. Just a lovely move. And you alluded to it before, Mike. It's just a shame it wasn't the winning goal. It deserved to be the winning goal, really, didn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, mate,
The thing with Sigurdsson this season, what I've liked at times with him, and he's so frustrating. I, like you said, sometimes he's playing too deep, it doesn't work for him. What I've liked is we've seen him a little bit more do that kind of thing. So obviously the goal against Spurs, Sheffield United away, lovely finish when he's just coming into the box, Leeds as well, you know, when he's played a bit further forward. We've seen more of that of Sigurdsson this season, which has been nice to see. I mean, if you look at his stats in terms of all competitions, he's played 37 games, he's scored 8 goals, and he's had 9 assists. Now, compared to last season and previous seasons, it's not a bad return. But we keep on saying, we want him to be doing it week in, week out. We want him to be having that kind of imprint on a game every single week, and it doesn't always work out. I mean, you know, my frustration with Sigurdsson when he throws in that tackle when the ball's already gone past him, but he still slides as if he's going to get anywhere near the ball to say, well, yeah, I had a go. I did try and get the ball, and the ball's already well gone. He frustrates the life out of me in that sense. But we know technically he's very, very good, and it was good to see him and James at times just link up nicely. And like we said, Carlo trusts him, and I fully expect he is 31. And just double check then. I fully expect probably another 12 months to be tagged on to the end of his contract, to be honest with you.
Now's the time to give him a contract, though, isn't it? On the back of that performance.
should have sorted it after the Anfield derby.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could have given him a 10-year one after that, and everyone would have been made up, yeah.
He could have brought you Marnie Asbach after the derby, and everyone would have been celebrating that, to be honest with you. He could have done whatever he wanted, but... It's since the derby game that we haven't really kicked on, which is you know, so frustrating in itself. When you have a performance like that, you know, you go there and win for the first time since 1999, and you just think, you know, the players must be on cloud nine. They must think, listen, the world's our oyster this season. We could break top four. And then since then, really, the wheels have come off a little bit. Like we've said, injuries have certainly not helped things. And show me any side who can deal with having sort of 7, 8, 9 important first team players injured at the same time, because not many will be able to obviously come out of most games with a win. But overall thoughts are frustrating. Should have won the game, and two mistakes have cost us. And the question really is now, you know, when we look ahead to Arsenal shortly, is Europe off the table? Is the chance gone after the last three games cost us? What are your thoughts on that, Lee?
It's still not over. I mean, a lot of teams are sort of dropping points, aren't they? I mean, West Ham dropped points. You'd never have thought they'd have lost at Newcastle yesterday on the run they've been on. Albeit with 10 men, they got back into the game. But teams are dropping points. I do think the top four is going to be now, or the final sort of four. Leicester could potentially drop out again. They've got some key injuries. West Ham obviously losing Declan Rice. Antonio as well could be crucial for them. Don't be surprised if towards the end of the season, Chelsea and Liverpool occupy those spots. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, the so-called top four that you probably expected at the start of the season, really. But in terms of Europa, I still think there's a real chance there for us. We've said it a lot of times, it's a must-win game against Palace, must-win game against Burnley, must-win game against Spurs. And obviously, you know, we've picked up, you know, just the 2 points from those three games. So Arsenal's the key game now. You know, Arsenal are on a bit of a run, I'd say a reasonable run. I mean, they had a great win in Prague the other day. They played some great footy. Lacazette looks like he's banging in goals. They look a completely different team when they've got Saka and Smith Rowe in there because they've got legs. And that won't be an easy game, but we need to get a result there. We definitely need to get a result if we want to get this European place. Weirdly, we've got to play Villa twice as well, haven't we? In the last few games, yeah, as well. So you've just got to hope we play a Villa without Jack Grealish, because Villa with Grealish, Villa without Grealish, are a different animal altogether. And the stats show that as well. Even if you watch them on TV, they just don't look anywhere near the same team without Grealish in the side. We just got to hope we play at least one of those games without him coming back into that team. Because when he does come back, he'll lift everyone just by him being inside. So those games are vital. You know, the Villa games, Arsenal, we've got to get results in those games. But if Calvert-Lewin is back, and obviously the key is that, you know, Alan stays fit between now and the end of the season. James stays fit between now and the end of the season. I do think we can still get it. I really do. I mean, Kane's obviously done his ankle there. Shame he didn't do it after 2 minutes, wasn't it? He did it in the 92nd. But if that's his ankle gone again, that could potentially be another few weeks out. And that could be vital for them, because that Vinicius is nowhere near the same player. And Son sort of dropped off form in the last few weeks as well. So it's still a shout, Mike. It's still a shout. I mean, we take Europa now. I mean, if we're being brutally honest with that squad, you know, we probably would have all thought Europa would have been a realistic shout at the start of the season anyway.
Yeah, we've got a hard run in, haven't we? You know, Villa twice. Yeah. Arsenal, we haven't won since the mid-90s. West Ham, we were doing well. City, on the way, you know, even if City players have been out on the aisle celebrating the title, they'll probably still be able to wipe the floor of us, to be fair, won't they? So that's tough. And then I think we've got Sheffield United and Wolves at home. But, you know, the home games in themselves have been tough, haven't they, for us recently? So, you know, I think it's, you know, similar to what Lee said, really. I don't think it's gone by any means because, you know, you look at the table there and, if you know, if we win this ill-fated game in hand, which I'm just sick of talking about, then we'll go above Tottenham into seventh, and that should be enough for the Europa League or the Europa Conference or whatever it is. You know, that, you know, I don't really care what it is. I just want to be getting on a plane to go and watch Everton somewhere next season. I'm not fussed about what competition it's in at this point. That's the most important thing. But it's gonna be a big test for us. But it's been a mad season, hasn't it? And I think the one thing that, you know, if we're trying to be positive about this, is that when we sort of went through this similar set of games around Christmas time, we picked up some good results, and we beat Arsenal, beat Chelsea, beat Leicester, and managed to find a way through. And, you know, I mean, the worry for me about this, and, you know, I think Lee's right in regards to James looks fit and Alan looks fit, and, you know, they're two key components for this side, obviously performing well. You wouldn't be surprised if we got the team news on Friday and one of them or both of them were out with, you know, a little knock and weren't available. And I think it's really hard to build a team around and get, you know, consistency when some of your key parts are out injured all the time or need a rest here and there. And that is a little bit of an issue, because I think when those two are out the side, you know, we haven't had the results to show it in the home games, but we've seen how much better we've been creatively since Rodriguez has been in. You know, we've been so much more inventive and productive in the final third in regards to our chance creation. If you take him out, you know, it's just 11 lads on the pitch, sort of, with, you may as well have their hands outstretched going to do a pass the ball to here. it's really difficult to envisage us doing anything without them too. But yeah, lots of time to go. But I think Arsenal will be tough next week. I think the key games for me, I think, are West Ham and the two Villa ones. I think they're going to be really tight, really horrible matches. And if we can get through... So we've got seven games left. You're looking at four wins, aren't you? I think you need four wins. So it's just whether you look at those fixtures and think, are we capable of doing that? And I think it'd probably be a bit of a stretch for us. But the way the season's been, the way this team's been at times this season, with the mad results they pulled out, you wouldn't put it totally past them.
It would be great if we could bookend it and we started with seven wins at the start of the season in all comps. If we could finish with seven wins, that'd be incredible. Big just, shout though.
Just Arsenal's one of those games that I just never, like, similar to Tottenham at home, actually, just never fancy us to get a, you know, because typically we don't get anything, but just always looking at it, I think, feel like it's a bit of a write-off. But yeah, I think if we're being positive, I think the good thing recently, certainly with the two home games, is that we've not come away from them going, What on earth was that? You know, you think about the Newcastle, Fulham and Burnley games, and I think collectively in those matches, Everton created one good goal-scoring opportunity, which they took from, you know, Calvert-Lewin against Burnley. Other than that, I can't remember us creating a chance against Fulham. Can't remember us creating a chance against Newcastle. They were rotten. Some of the worst home performances I've seen from an Everton side in a long time. You know, this might sound a bit like, at least we're not getting beat at home anymore, and that's sort of being a positive. It's, you know, very much the bare minimum. But I think it's good that we're seeing chance creation. It's just, you know, can they marry that more enterprising attack and play, and by staying solid at the back as well? Because it's been the defending that's cost us a little bit in both of those games at times.
Mm. I mean, you touched on there, obviously, when, you know, it wouldn't surprise you if you saw it on Friday, oh, there's no James or there's no Alan. And, you know, the two of them have had their injuries and the periods of rest over the course of the season. And one concern that we've had for a little while is the distinct lack of squad depth. When we get down to after, say, 12 or 13 players, we struggle. You know, even those players who are on the periphery, likes of Nkunku, as an example, he's played limited time at the start of the season. When he got brought in against Newcastle away, it was almost as if Carlo had seen enough there and thought, no, he's not ready for first team football, in my opinion. And he hasn't really been seen, he hasn't really come on the pitch at all for the first team since then. But obviously, when we do lose someone like James, Alan, obviously the Coy that we've seen, Calvert-Lewin, Yerry Mina, you know, we've had a few suspensions with Richarlison as well over the course of the season. When we're losing that kind of quality, we haven't got the quality to call upon in the rest of the squad to replace them. And that's probably my biggest concern. in terms of these final seven games. If we do get into a position where James is out again for a game or two, or Allen, you know, we think he's back and he's not back, and you know he played against Spurs, might not see him against Arsenal, we just don't know. And that's the biggest thing for me, is when we lose one of those, especially the players who were brought in the summer to really improve the side. The only player who we've consistently seen who got brought in the summer has been Ben Godfrey. That's the only one who's been there, and he's played in about five or six different bloody positions. And you know, he's for me up there as one of our players of the season, in my opinion. But we haven't seen, you know, Decore obviously unlucky with this injury now. But James in and out of the side, Allen in and out of the side, and it's what we can do with the players that we do have available when we have those key players not fit. And I think my thoughts, Matt, are going forward into the new transfer, the next transfer window, sorry, we've got to be looking to get him quality on a similar level of the Allens, the Corey, James, Ben Godfrey, so, you know, Luca Dean. So when we are losing key players to injury, we can call upon the same kind of quality off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes back to recruitment, doesn't it? And that is something we've been horrendous at, like, for a long time now. And you look at some of those players who I imagine we'll all be looking at going, you know, he's not good enough to fill in for player X, who's in the first team. Probably spent a fair bit of money on them, you know, and look at it, you know, Alex Iwobi's obviously one, Andre Gomez is one, Fabian Delph is one, you know, you can rattle them off. There's so many players there that we brought in who just aren't quite good enough. But, yeah, I think a lot of teams are in a similar position, aren't they? I think outside of maybe City and Chelsea, if someone loses a key player, it is very detrimental. You know, even Liverpool, who won the league last year, they lost a few defenders earlier this season and the roof caved in on them, effectively. And they've had a season where they're struggling to finish in the top four and, you know, out of all the competitions relatively early on by their standards. But, yeah, I think the summer's going to be dead interesting. I think the signings we made last summer, obviously the four main ones, but you could sort of put them into two categories. I think those players who were for the here and now, that were Decore, James and Alan. And I think you had a player in Godfrey who they didn't anticipate being for the here and now, thought he'd be around the first team squad, play a few games, was more like an investment for the future. Obviously that's turned out very well for us, because like you said, he's been one of our best players this season. I think what I'd like to see in the summer is sort of that 3-1 dynamic we saw last summer flipped a little bit. I think we need to get some younger players in through the door who are more dependable in regards to the fitness, who can recover quicker if we're in Europe and we've got a you know, more of a schedule, who potentially got you know, better reset. You know, all these boring things that people talk about when it comes to football transfers. But I do sort of look at our squad at times and think it's, we are dependent on some players who are a little bit injury prone, like I said, but we're not quite dynamic enough, we're not quite aggressive enough, and I think we need to be looking at players who can bring that into the team. And I think looking at players in sort of the age brackets of 21 to 25, you know, potentially pick players we could pick up from Europe for a bit cheaper, and then maybe bring in one more experienced player who we can drop into the team at a certain point and do a job right now. But I wouldn't want to see another set of 29, 30-year-olds come in to the squad, because it feels as though, you know, already, you know, we've been having conversations about James, and I think people are just fearful he's going to leave because we've not seen him in the flesh yet. And, you know, good things don't happen to us as a football club, but you're sort of looking beyond him already because of his fitness and his age, and it's, you know, it's the same with Alan. So, yeah, I think I'd like to see players brought in this summer, obviously of quality, but potentially with a little bit more of a long-term view to the recruitment.
Mm. I mean, James has only played 24 times this season in all competitions, which when we're comparing to, say, Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's knocking out for nearly 40 games, it shows you, obviously, the struggles that we've had with his fitness. I mean, in that time, by the way, he still scored 6 goals and got 9 assists. So it shows you how important he is to our side when it comes to creativity, and, you know, his percentage of goal involvement is very, very good. But Lee, what do you echo what Matt's saying there, and obviously my thoughts in terms of, you know, the concerns around squad depth, but more importantly, what Matt said in regards to whoever does come in the summer has got to be in a particular age bracket for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. If we're building for the long term and not the short term, which is what you'd hope we are, then that's the case, isn't it? I mean, you have to look at the, you know, the recruitment for someone like a Leicester. You know, they've signed some really, really good players at a good age. You know, one who stands out is that Fofana, centre back. You know, they've pulled him over from France. He looks a real player. I do think Ben Godfrey for me was a shrewd signing. I think we need a few shrewd signings in that sort of category. How many times did we watch Norwich last year? I mean, they beat us at our place, but I don't think anyone, I've not heard anyone mention, oh yeah, do you see that centre-back, Ben Godfrey? He looked the real talent. You know what I mean? And everyone was talking about Max Ahrens at right-back, weren't they? And Buendia and Pukie and, you know, Campwell and people like that. So Godfrey was a real shrewd signing, and hopefully he'll go on to be a top player for us. It looks like the Max Ahrens one again linked in the summer. Linked again this week for the summer move. I wouldn't be surprised if we, you know, if that's been trying to be worked on in the background, to be honest. And obviously, Brand's hopefully work his magic to knock down that fee from 30 million to more like 20 million. But he's the sort of category we're looking at, and it's someone in that sort of age bracket who's obviously got, you know, potentially another 10 years ahead of him. I know Norwich got promoted yesterday, so that might increase the price a little bit as well. But I like looking at their midfield as well. That Buendia is a real player. He's only 21, an Argentine. He's just got something about him, isn't he? He's technically good. He's got a little bit of pace. He's got a bit of everything, really. I think for me, with the mix we've got in midfield now, he'd be perfect, someone like that sort of ilk, really. We desperately need pace in that team as well, don't we? Someone with a bit of dynamism. I look at someone like how well Rafinha's done at Leeds. You know, someone that plays on the right-hand side, left-footed, almost very... A bit like Mahrez type, really. But also, you know, the manager's got him tracking back. He's got him working hard. He looks like he's going to do something every time he gets the ball. Really like Pedro Neto at Wolves. Obviously, unfortunately, the lad's just done his ligaments. But players like that who are that sort of age, really, you know, who've obviously got a bit of pace and dynamism about them, I think would really inject something into our team. But the Hammers one's an interesting one. If you'd have said, really, at the start of the season, with the injury record he had, I think he played 6 games for Madrid last season. If you were going to get 25 games out of him, we all probably would have said, yeah. You know what I mean? Because we got him on a free. And if he was playing 40 games a season, let's be brutally honest, he probably wouldn't be Everton. You know what I mean? He'd probably still be knocking on Real Madrid's door. So in that respect, it just shows you what he offers us when he plays, because he has that extra bit of magic on the ball, really. He just sees things other players don't. He always has time and space. We just need to get as many runners off the ball as possible for him. We've become quite predictable a little bit down that left side, him switching plays to Luka Dean. We just need someone coming down the right side. I think I said to you in the week, Mike, when Everton were peak Moyes, we had Coleman down one side, Baines down the other. And we almost we didn't completely invent it, but we were the ones who had these flying fullbacks, didn't we, going forward, who both created, both, you know, Coleman in his pomp was getting, you know, 7, 8, 9 goals a season. And I think we just need someone with that dynamism down the right side who can make runs. Because all we have to do with Hammers is get him on the ball and have runners running off him and he'll find you. And hopefully it won't be as one-dimensional as just, you know, trying to look for the left-back. So it's an interesting one, but I do think... Yeah, I overall have been impressed with what Brands has done at the club. He's had a lot of mess to deal with. I know some fans have jumped on him, but ultimately, you know, he's been involved in over 80 transfers in a short space of time. He's got rid of a lot of, you know, let's be honest, a lot of crap out of the team. Hopefully he can get rid of a few more in the summer. And if we get those 3 or 4 players, you know, and they stay fit, I do think we'll have a good season next season.
You know, I think Lee mentioned the player there in Rafinha. Yeah, just for another couple of ones down there. Yeah. Basuma as well. You know, Fofana, yeah, as well, you said, at Leicester. You know, they're the sort of players you look at and go, those clubs have got them through really good scouting and really strong recruitment departments. Because they're not players that, you know, people are well aware of playing at top clubs. And they're probably all doing all right. You know, certainly in Rafinha and Fofana's case. I'm not entirely sure where Basuma came from, to be honest, so forgive me there. But, you know, they're players who are probably doing well in that league. Not standing out by a mile, but they've looked at them and thought there's something there to work with and gone and got them for a big price. And, you know, you'd imagine if all those players were being sold this summer, you know, Rafinha's already been linked with top clubs. Basuma, being talked up as potentially going to play for a Champions League club. I seen Fofana was linked with Manchester United yesterday. You know, they're selling them on after you know, a year or two, and they're making an absolute wedge. And then they've got the trust and belief in their recruitment department to go and get the next one from League X or League Y. And that's that's not necessarily something that we've been able to do because the recruitment has been so poor. Like, but I think that's what I'd be looking at in the summer, maybe get a few of those sorts of players in. You know, I think Fofana was 30 million, something, wasn't it, like that. But Rafinha and Bissouma, I think they paid about £15 million each for them, both of those clubs. You know, they're looking like really good pickups. And you know, it's not easy because, you know, a lot of clubs have got great recruitment departments now and are looking at these sorts of players, and you know, they're hard to get. But I think that's where I'd probably say I'd be a little bit disappointed in Brands. You know, I think there's been some great things he's done in regards to shifting players. We brought in some really exciting players. You know, Ben Godfrey in particular looks like he's going to be a great acquisition for us in the long term. But, you know, scouring the market on the continent and bringing in players who we can potentially get on the cheap and plug them into the team and, you know, maybe make a lot of money in them in the future. Maybe could have done a bit more there. But just on Rodriguez, I think he's just, the fact that he's on such a different level technically and football intelligence-wise is so obvious. But I think when you've got that and it's only there sporadically, that sort of becomes a bit of an issue, doesn't it? I think because, you know, it's almost like going to play five-a-side with your mates and you've got one player who's just miles better than everybody else and you just keep giving him the ball because, you know he's better than the rest of you and he'll keep it and score a goal and do something dead good. And then if he doesn't turn up next week, you're all sort of like, oh, what do we do now? You know, this lad who we always pass the ball to is not here. And I think that there's a bit of that, I think, with Hammers where when he's, you know, look at the way in which they fell to pieces the final 10 minutes against Crystal Palace when he went off the other week. So that's a bit of an issue. And, you know, I love watching the lad and I really hope we can get to see him next season. But there's this, like, pragmatic, sensible part of my brain that keeps saying, would you be better having someone who's not quite as good available for more games over the long term? And I know that is a little bit boring, but I think on a positive point of view on him, I think what's been good in the last three games is he's looked a lot fitter. I think he's really benefited from the time off. I felt like there was a spell after Christmas, certainly when he was rushed back for that West Ham game on the bench, and everyone was like, wow, he's involved. No one expected that. I felt as though the club was sort of trying to nurse him through, and he clearly wasn't fully fit. You know, at Anfield, he gets an assist at Old Trafford, he scores, and he comes off before the hour in both games, which I think says a lot about how they were sort of managing his condition. Against Palace, he played 80 minutes. Brighton on Monday, probably wasn't his best game with the ball, but he was, you know, off it, probably the most he's ran in an Everton shirt. And then again on Friday, he was on the pitch, winning it back and driving us forward well beyond the 80th minute. So I think he looks like he's benefited from that break. And maybe the short-term pain we had to take by not playing him, you know, a few weeks ago when he was 70-80% fit and just holding him back until after that international break, maybe that's benefited him now to the point where he's probably in the best shape physically he's been since he's been at the football club. And perhaps that in the long term will mean that we get to see him a lot more on the pitch, which can only be a good thing.
100%, mate. I totally agree. I mean, I can't. I just pray to God we all get to see him in the flesh at Goodison next season. I really do. Because I think when you see a player like that in the flesh, I think all of us will there, certainly at home in a few games, we'll all be there with our mouths open with some of the stuff he'll be doing. He is, like you said, on a completely different level to everybody else. Not just technically, but also, like you said, intellect as well. You just see it. You know, like I said, even that pass for the goal in the derby, you know, there's probably majority of players there play it straight to Richarlison into his path. He's gone, no, I'll just knock that the other side of the defender. You know what I mean? So he can run onto it. It sounds simple, but in a chaotic, you know, frantic first 10 minutes of a derby, he's just got a clear head. I see the pass. I'm going to roll it to you. And a bit like De Bruyne and players like that, you know, every single time it's perfectly weighted, isn't it? It's just perfectly weighted. The guy doesn't have to move. And for me, with James, next season, he'll probably, you know, if he's still here, it probably will be a similar output in terms of games. But I'm hoping we just have a bit more depth so Carlo can pick and choose when to play him. Sometimes you might do, for example, like he did against Leeds. He knew Leeds was going to be a really sort of, you know, energy-sapping game. They play with a high press. He said, let's try and match these. And he's been selective with him and gone, right, okay, I'll bring him on, you know, in the last sort of 20, 30 minutes. And I think that's, if Carlo can do that and use him against you know, teams where we're going to have more of the ball, essentially, you play a low block. You can play potentially, you know, 80, 90 minutes. And then if we're playing other teams, then kind of go, oh, look, we've still got the squad here. So we'll just throw them in last 30 when everyone's knackered and he can do some magic and create goals. I think that's how I think he will probably want to use him. And if we get Europe, let's be honest, we're probably going to need to add four or five quality additions, aren't we? And otherwise, you know, like what happened under Martinez, if you don't strengthen when you go into Europe and you're playing the same players midweek and weekend, it's only a matter of time before you start picking four, five, six injuries up. So, yeah, the squad, and like I said at the very start, I think Carlo plays with what he's got. You know, he plays with what he looks at that squad and goes, right, he doesn't moan about injuries, and I like that. Some managers obviously complain about it and whinge. Even Coleman referred to it in his interview the other day, which is quite comical. But, you know, I think, to be fair, he just said, look, these are my players, we're just going to crack on. But I think if you were to speak to him really and have a private conversation with him, he would say, yeah, I've probably got 13 lads here who I really trust, who I could play more expansively, and we could probably go on and probably score three or four. But as soon as those three or four of those cogs are out the engine, it's just not going to work. So I'm just going to basically play a very pragmatic game and try and nick a goal. And I think that's what he's done all season. And hopefully, with a few quality additions in the summer, we might see more of the former and not the latter, isn't it?
Yeah, an important summer. We said it over the last few weeks. We've had, you know, little discussions on the potential transfer activity. It's another pivotal summer, but it's another summer and another transfer window closer to getting to a Carlo Ancelotti team. You know, it's like you said before, he's still, you know, putting sides together with a lot of players bought from other managers, brought in for other systems and things like that. But if we can get players in of similar quality or maybe slightly less quality than Hamed, but like you said before, Matt, you can play more than sort of 24, 25 games a season, then hopefully it stands us in good stead going forward. But we'll round off this week's show. We discussed it briefly already in terms of obviously the Arsenal fixture coming up on Friday. Another important game. You know, they're playing against Fulham today, Arsenal. And if they win that, that'll put them only a point behind us. And, you know, things are getting quite tight behind us now. Obviously, Arsenal leads sides like that who are closing in. Arsenal are in, you know, probably in decent form. Great win in Europe, as we said already, into the semi-final of the Europa League. It's funny because when you see the likes of the Arsenal fan TV clips, you know, every single week, because they're always good to go and have a little watch of them every single week, especially when they lose. And they seem to be quite an inconsistent side, Arsenal, but the likes of, like we said before, Lee Lacazette hitting a bit of form, Saka's back from injury, Smith Rowe, who's come on this season and been a real talent for them. It's going to be a game that, you know, it's going to be difficult. We haven't won there, like Matt said before, since the mid 90s. But again, you know, with no fans in the ground, with probably Dominic Calvert-Lewin back in as well, which will be a help. Gomez and Bernard potentially back in the squad, so it makes the squad obviously that little bit better again. Can we go there and win, Lee?
I think it's a real opportunity. It's a real opportunity to go there and win. We've just got to hope that we have those key players fit. It's just been the tale of our season, like Matt said before, that, you know, Carlo will have a presser and say, yeah, unfortunately, Alan's picked up a knock in training, he can't play. Amez is, you know, unfortunately picked up a niggle or whatever, and then all of a sudden then you look, go, right, suddenly, like, yeah, we're going to do well to get a point here now. It's a weird one, Arsenal, because they've had a very up and down season themselves. They're clearly prioritising the Europa League now because they know if they can win that and they've got a chance, it'll probably be an Arsenal-United final, let's be honest. There's a chance that they can get into the Champions League through that route. That may play in our favour, potentially. They might rest a few players. But they've had a very, very, very strange season. You know, Aubameyang's been a complete shock for me this season. You know, if you were to ask any Evertonian now, would you have Aubameyang in your team? You snap your hand off, because, you know, he's clinical when he wants to be, but he almost looks like now he's actually worked his backside off to get the contract, and now he's got his feet up a little bit maybe. But you know, but then
he
look
did,
at that.
He did, He did contract malaria as well, which hasn't helped in the last.
No, that's very recently, obviously. But I mean, he clearly doesn't look anywhere near the same level as he was last year. You know, but look, they can afford to say, look, well, you know, prior to his illness, he wasn't even getting in the team. You know, Lacazette was, and again, Lacazette's another player I'd have at Everton, and he's a very good centre forward. He's very good all round. Holds the ball up well, clinical finisher. Arsenal just. Since he brought, you know, he was on the verge of getting sacked, Mikel, if we all think back when they were on that horrendous run, they were in the bottom five or six. And then he almost threw the dice a little bit and went through Saka in, through Smith Rowe in. And then all of a sudden, you know, they had a good win against Chelsea, didn't they? When they put these youngsters in. Suddenly our players, you know, the players were running. You know, these young players injected something into that team. And then they went on a bit of a decent run. Then they dropped again. And then they went on another, you know, they sort of almost recovered again. But then I watched them against Liverpool the other day and they were absolutely dire. But then you look at the team, they had no Smith Rowe in that team, no Saka. So Liverpool played them at the perfect time. So then they had the old boys back in who didn't put a shift in, and all of a sudden Liverpool looked like they were going to score four or five. So it's an interesting one. And, you know, overall, Mikel, I think, has done a reasonable job. But, you know, unless they have a strong finish to the season or win the Europa League, like I said, his job could be gone in the summer. So it's an opportunity for us, definitely. And if those same players are on the pitch with Calvert-Lewin added to it, we've got no reason, no fear why we can't go there and create chances and try and win the game.
They're such a weird team, aren't they? Like I watched them against West Ham the other week, and the first half they were like properly abject, and then the second half they got a goal back and they looked, you know, the absolute business going forward. You know, Odegaard was like pulling the strings, playing as the number 10. They had like, I think it was Callum Chambers, like turning to Cafu, was roaring down the right hand side, and they got, you know, vibrant young attackers. It was like, what on earth's got on here? But they have got a Liverpool at home in them, I think, likely. They've all, as much as I feel as though Arteta is doing a lot of good things there, every now and then they can just chuck in a performance like that where they are utterly miserable for 90 minutes. And they've been a bit like that for a while, Arsenal, but those games never seem to come against us at the Emirates. You know, you see them self-capitulate so often in some of these matches at home, and their own fans going mental. Obviously, it's not been the same recently, but you just look at them and think, God, they're absolutely horrendous. And then whenever we play them, you know, they seem to click into a gear. They're just one of those sides that never really fancies to get anything against. They've got some good attacking players, haven't they? You know, they've got a lot of good young players there. You know, people like Saka and Martinelli and Smith Rowe, as you mentioned. I think Odegaard's got a bit of an injury, but he looks like a really exciting young player as well. So I think those players can always cause you problems. But I think defensively, there is a lot of weaknesses there. You know, still weirding out David Luiz after all this time. You know, Pablo Mari, I think, is, you know, okay. Kieran Tierney, he's turned into a bit of a croc, isn't he? I think he can't really string games to go without getting injured. So they've got major issues there. But you sort of look at the way we played our football, our best this season, in regards to being compact and you know, springing from a solid shape and being good on set pieces. And you feel as though we'd be this should be a good matchup for us. You know, this really should. We've obviously been better away from home as well. But it's just something about Arsenal and something about the Emirates, something about Highbury that seems to bring out the worst in us and the best in them. You know, even last season, you know, we went there playing really well, didn't we? Took the lead after 30 seconds. They were terrible and we still conspired to lose the game, having created loads of chances in the second half and missed them as well. So, yeah, it's probably a game, to be honest, lad, that's more coloured by my past experiences watching us against Arsenal than what we're actually seeing from these two teams at the moment, because it does just feel like sometimes it's just grounds and teams where you're never going to win and you're never going to beat.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hoodoo we need to put to bed there, like the Spurs game, first game of the season, wasn't it? You know, one of my favourite Everton goals was the P&R little dink in was it like the snow and hail that was coming down at the time? And
yeah,
that was a last minute, that should have been a last minute winner, but we still managed to. I think Van Persie scored, didn't he, in the 97th minute or something
It was a deflected Thomas Rosicky strike.
Oh, was it? There you go. You've got a better memory than me.
I think James Vaughan had the chance to make a 3-1 as well. Straight after.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
But they're just not very good, are they? But just one of those teams, really. they always seem to find a way against us. I mean, the fact that we've got a worse record there than we have at Anfield probably tells you all you need to know. You know, we speak about that record, well, up until this year, how bad that record was, and we, you know, how much of a hoodoo that was. We've actually got a worse record at Highbury / the Emirates and a worse record at Stamford Bridge. So, yeah, doesn't bode well.
It's got to go at some time. We've done it against Liverpool at Anfield recently, and you know, let's be honest, if we look back at those Arsenal teams over the years, this has got to be one of their worst. Even though on paper it's not a bad team, certainly, in the, like you said, in the top half of the pitch, you can get at them defensively, definitely. I mean, you know, Rob Holding starting in pretty much every game in the minute for him, that tells you everything you need to know. And like you said, David Luiz, you know, how's he still getting a game in that team? And
Gabriel looks a bit of a bullet dodge for us as well, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he started well, didn't he? He started the season really well, and you thought, oh no, here we go. He looks like he's going to be a top draw player, but then, yeah, he seems to have dropped off a little bit. And Tierney, I liked. I think when they were going through a really, really crap spell, he was the one that stood up and basically, you know, he showed that sort of grit. And obviously, unfortunately, recently for them, he's picked up quite a few injuries, but he, you know, I think he'll turn out to, if he stays fit, a good signing. But we've got to go there, and we've got to go there and just basically know that, look, play anything anywhere near the level of that Spurs game, Palace game, and create chances, and just be clinical. If we can be clinical, I think we'll win the game. I think we'll win the game if we can be clinical. But we've got to be clinical in that game, and I think we'll create chances against them. They'll allow us to play. I don't think they'll be in our faces. I think they will allow us to play, and I think we will create if those same players are on the pitch.
I think if they lose,
I can see it.
Sorry, mate. Just going to say, I think if they lose today, I think Fort will fully turn to the Europa League then for them, and we might see a bit of a scratch side from them as well on Friday. Because I think the first leg of the Europa League tie is the week after, is it? We play them, so we may see them just sort of rotate a little bit and bring in some players that, you know, that aren't quite fancy with that game in mind. So maybe what happens a bit later on today could be important for us as well with that in mind.
Yeah, and Fulham need a win today.
Definitely.
Yeah, so Arsenal play Villarreal first leg, 29th of April. So obviously we play them Friday, and that'll be the next game. So yeah, a lot probably rides on this afternoon against Fulham. But like we've said, you know, let's hope that the way they play against Liverpool, that side turns off, because they certainly are Jekyll and Hyde side, probably more than ourselves, Arsenal. But I think it's going to be an open game. I really do. I can see goals from both sides, to be honest with you. But if Calvert-Lewin's back in, I think it massively helps, takes the pressure off Richarlison as well. And also, I think what we struggled with in recent weeks is when we've had to go long, and sometimes we've gone long more often than not against Brighton, we were doing it quite often. And Richarlison's never going to hold the ball up for you. No fault of his own. He's not that kind of player. And bring players in. Whereas Calvert-Lewin, a very, very good part of his game, is bringing that ball down, back to goal, and bringing other players in. And it does relieve the pressure a little bit as well. So I think get Don back in there, get a couple more bodies back on the bench as well. I think we can go there and win the game. And I'm going to kick off first. I'm going to go for an Everton win, 3-2. I'm going. Goals galore. Yeah.
Be a great Friday night, that, mate.
It would, yeah, it would. And we have a nice weekend as well afterwards. But I'm going 3-2. Matt, what are you saying?
I can't bring myself to say we're going to win just because it's Arsenal and the Emirates. But I think I tend to agree with everything you said there. I think there'll be goals. I think with Don back, he tends to do pretty well against Arsenal. Always seems to cause their centre-back problems. So I'll go 2-2.
Lee?
Goal fest here, boys. Goal fest. Get on the both teams to score on your acca there straight away. I think it's going to be a score draw as well, to be honest. I'm going to say 1-1. I think as much as I'd love the hoodoo to be broken, I do think Arsenal will, you know, they'll definitely score, because obviously the way we defended recently has not been great. But I do think we'll cause them problems. So I'm going to go 1-1. Sounds like you're a West Ham fan there, Mike. Haven't they had 3-3, 3-2, 3-2, 3-3, or something mad
with that
in the last four games.
Certainly have.
Classic
Moyes football,
isn't it? I was going to say, yeah. Since when did Moyes turn into Martinez? You know what I mean?
I know. They're Jekyll and Hyde side from the first half to the second half, aren't they, West Ham? one way or another. Absolutely incredible what's happening there. But good to they dropped some points yesterday, because when I got back to 2-0, I thought to myself, here we go. You know, down to 10 men, back to 2-0. We know how this is going. But Newcastle decided to get the win, which was good. But no, we'll take care of our own business. We've got West Ham to come. We've got a lot of important games on the horizon, and none more important than Friday against Arsenal. But that's us for this week, Matt. Thanks very much for giving up some time on a Sunday morning to speak to us, mate.
Ah, pleasure, lads. Lovely way to spend a Sunday morning.
It certainly is. And let's hope we get Pete back in next week, and there's no injuries from his activities this morning and over the course of today. But we will be back next weekend to look back on the Arsenal game, and hopefully look ahead to a game against Aston Villa, which might be on, it might not be on, we don't know. We'll find out after the Arsenal game, so we'll catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.